Welcome to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. At Finstrat, we provide CFO-led accounting, finance, and reporting services to assist clients monetize their business. Stick around to the end of the podcast, and I'll share how you can be our next guest. Now, on to the show. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. With us today, we have Dr. Ashley Blackington. Ashley is the founder and CEO of Dovetail. Ashley, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
Let's start with Dovetail. What problem is it solving in the marketplace?
Yeah, we are the problem that I ran into. So I came to this as a therapist, as a clinician who was on the sort of that side of things for a very long time, was seeing the impact that caregiving was having on caregivers and coordinating care, and sort of a lot of gaps that exist in the healthcare system and a lot of gaps that exist in the infrastructure for family caregivers. And so Dovetail is aiming to really provide that infrastructure for caregivers to be able to have tools in their tool belt that are kindred to what healthcare systems offer.
Okay. And let's, if you can take us through how you accomplish that with the scope of the solution, please.
Yeah, sure. So we started out with sort of the natural project, build out with a bunch of interviews and MVP, all of those things. But what we have out in the market right now, as we continue to iterate on this, is the communication side of the platform, so that family caregivers can create a flock around a care recipient, so that we've eliminated a lot of the friction when it comes to communication in families. And one of the things that happens a lot in the healthcare system, because it's not a fault of the healthcare system, it's the nature of whatever it is that a lot of communication gets distilled down to one person, and then there's no opportunity for that communication to open back up to the family. So it ends up everything sort of funnels down to one, and then it stays one person's responsibility, whereas family caregiving, and especially long-term family caregiving, is best done in a team or in a group effort. And that means that you're going to have different people at different levels get involved. You know, some people are going to be sort of more on the fray, and some people really need to be into it. And so with the back end of Dovetail, we've built that so that you have very detailed control over who has access to what information, so that you can effectively create this onion or flock around a person who is needing care, whether that is family or whether that is paid, and you can layer it in that way. So that's what's on the market today.
And what software platforms is the solution available on?
We are available on Apple and Google as well, or Android.
So predominantly mobile, or is there a browser-based front end as well?
Yeah, so we have, right now we are mobile only, and we are bringing the desktop version. That's one of those things where it's been a big learning process for me on the tech side of things, is how quickly some things go through and some things don't go through, and what all those parts and pieces are and what makes sense for users to have. So we are we're still developing out the desktop version and putting that through to have that available to users hopefully by the end of the year. That's the long range goal.
Okay, and then have a bunch of thoughts, but any diagnoses or cohorts in particular that you're finding the most traction with?
Yeah, it's definitely more of the long-term, the chronic, the when people come into caregiving, family caregiving, you know, they might come in for an acute situation, right? Someone has fallen, someone has gone to the emergency room, there's sort of this flurry of activity and this flurry of involvement, and then that person rehabilitates, that person gets better. We are seeing users with that, but definitely more on the oncology side, on the neurological side, on the long-term progressive illnesses, where people are not in it for a couple of months. People are going to be in this for a couple of years. Things are going to change, and they're going to have they're going to have times when they need to pull more support in or they need less support depending on the diagnosis and how that person is progressing. And so the flexibility of the model itself is really tending to lean more towards the long-term caregiving side of it.
And the intersection with the clinician, how did you address making sure that the family caregivers are aware of guidance, feedback, instructions from the physicians, hospitals?
Yeah. It's tricky. It's a really big, I think that's a really big piece that's missing in the market right now because hospitals, financial information and healthcare information is they're just it's sort of a no fail only option when it comes to information sharing, when it comes to managing that data and stuff like that. And so, I think what has happened is that a lot of these big healthcare platforms have become really siloed, and that is for the sake of data safety. And that's should be 100% should be. And so what has resulted in that is that the go-between all of these different caregiving or different hospital pieces of software has been the family caregiver is the bridge for all of that. And so all of that information is being handed to them. They're the ones with the logins for all the different platforms. They're the ones who, when you go to see one specialist, you have the printout for the other one. And so right now what we have available is you can create your own essentially medical record within Dovetail. It's a rolling note. You can have people that are added to it. And all of that. And our next piece of development that's coming out very, very shortly. I wish I had an actual date, but tis the nature of it all.
We'll include it in the show notes.
Yeah, but so the what we're gonna we're working towards is that you'd be able to take that note and you'd be able to take the note and get a summary for the last, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, whatever. And then that would be turned into a clinical note that gets sent to the provider so that they have the ability to review that and put it in the chart, or the patient or the caregiver can actually upload it into the chart so that all of that information is there in a way that clicks with the provider in what they need in order to make different changes to medication or diagnosis or testing or things like that. And then it also we'll have a summary for the rest of the family, and that is the idea there is to keep everybody on the same page so
Got
that it's not one person who's got all of this information and then they're sort of piecing it out. It's a monthly update. It can be done that way. So the trick in all of this is how do you interface as a growing, still newish startup with something like an Epic or a MyChart where it's this big it's this just a monster of a platform. And so we're figuring out how to get into that without having to rely on a partnership with them in order to be successful. So how can we work around that system?
Well, I mean, I think you bring up a great point, and it sounds like you're living it right now. And you also alluded it from a security perspective that, healthcare is not for the faint of heart. You have a lot of established stakeholders, for better or for worse, protect everything that they do. And when you have entrepreneurs who come along seeking to improve the process, man, if there isn't a lot of hoops.
Yes,
Jump.
yes.
So if we can, let's talk about that. So go to market strategy. How, without revealing any proprietary secrets, how are you thinking about distribution and ensuring that this company's top line is grown?
Yeah, I think that, to tie it in with all of the pieces around, you have these juggernauts within the system is that I am not going to be David in this situation. We are not taking this down one pebble at a time. And so the perspective that I have in this is I'm not going to change that. I'm not going to sort of come into the tens of millions of dollars that are necessary in order to build the thing that becomes the next thing. How can I build a piece of software, build a platform that actually smooths out the friction point along the way? Like I feel like someone who is building, you're almost like, the sharks and they have the fish or whatever that attach onto the sharks and they're like, okay, I'm just here to like help keep you clean and like smooth it all out. Do you know what I'm talking about?
For Morris.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like that's the role that a small startup can have in the healthcare system. You're not going to upend it. So how can you smooth it out, and how can you make that make sense? And so that's why one of the pieces is we're not relying on a full integration with Epic in order to be our step one of a go-to-market strategy.
So,
Yeah, go ahead.
no, you please finish the thought.
I was just going to say our goal is to target the people who have fallen through the cracks or at risk for falling through the cracks, and to offer them infrastructure and technology that they are long overdue to have in order to make things better, easier, simpler for them, versus trying to come at it from a healthcare to consumer part. We're going consumer first. And that is, small practices, that is families, that is discharge from the hospital. Holy cow, what do I do with all of this information? Because I've been there as a clinician. I've been one of six providers that discharges a patient, and you hand a pile of information to a caregiver who's got a teenager or a toddler sitting in the room, and their parent is sitting in the hospital bed, and they're like, I am not sure how I'm going to manage all of this. And so, how can I help that person? Because there's 63 million of them in this country, and it is only going to grow and continue to grow for the next 10 or 15 years. It's going to be a monster number by then.
So you may have answered the question for me indirectly, but I'm going to ask is how did you realize that you had to be extremely focused and niche when it comes to your go-to-market strategy? Because a lot of entrepreneurs find that out the hard way.
I think it for me, the go to market is really has been related to the reason why I started this. So I think that sometimes if you get into an industry and you're like, this is a really hot channel right now, and this is where everyone seems to be going for this. Yes, no fault there. But the reason that I got into building the software, the reason why I started, pen and paper scratching this out, was not to get to, X number of dollars exit. It was so that when I walked into a room with a family that needed something like this, and I didn't have anything to offer them, that I would have something, that they wouldn't feel like they are sort of on an island, trying to figure out medical jargon, trying to figure out discharge, trying to figure out what all of this means, and not feel like they had somebody in their corner. So that's really for me where the go-to-market has started.
And I think it helps reinforce the point why you see this subset of investors who will only invest in a vertical if the founder has domain experience and expertise. Yeah, I mean, it makes total sense. I mean, if you're a practitioner and you see firsthand what happens to outcomes if the family isn't dialed in, there's a problem. My next question on that was going to be, so I applaud focusing on consumers to start. I think it's super wise, especially in an industry like health tech, because there isn't the least amount of friction to get started, and cash flow, for any company is king, but especially in the early stage. I'm curious, has that translated into any specific cohorts? And my thoughts go to, socioeconomic, rural, Medicaid. Or is it a little bit more, or are you thinking a little bit more broad right now?
Definitely keeping it more broad. But the there are a lot of in the health tech space, when I started looking at what else was around, what else was sort of in this area and in this wheelhouse, there is a really big gap between people who are able to access benefits through their employer that help with this, and what that costs for the employer. There are platforms out there that charge $300 a month to have concierge style services, and that's wonderful. That is also not accessible by everybody at the company, right? This is geared towards more of the C-suite, more of the people who have the capacity or the financial resources to be able to use these services. I am more in the if someone would fall between the cracks, right? Like a lot of caregivers, the statistic is around, it's between 60 and 70%, I can't remember. They either retire early, reduce their hours, leave their job altogether, search for a new job because of the responsibilities of caregiving hours in the week, right? Family caregivers on average now average at least 24 hours a week of care outside of work. Outside of work, outside of hanging out with their own kids, grocery shopping, all of the things that need to get done. And so those are the people who may not have the access that somebody who has, a $300 a month membership available to them through their employer. They may have had to change their employment in order to care for a family caregiver. And for me, I think that those are the people who are who could benefit the most from this. And so that's come with a how do we price this product? How do we think about who we're talking to about it? How do we think about what we need to bring on in terms of features that can help reduce friction, but also don't raise the costs of it? Because there are a lot of features that are available online. I mean, AI is wonderful, that we can pull in, but that would drive the price point of our product up into that more niche financial stratosphere that I don't think is gonna be helpful. So I'm really targeting the people who need the infrastructure, wouldn't necessarily be able to access the infrastructure. And so how can we create it and offer it for them? As far as Medicaid and all of that stuff, I'm keeping it intentionally broad at this point in time for that.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like you're on the right track. I think calling out the fact that someone's devoting 24 hours a week, it's a second time job, part time job. And, obviously, if you're the lone family member, that's hard. But to your point, if there's others and you can optimize the process, I mean, this makes great sense. The numbers speak for themselves. If we take a step back, I'd love to learn about the career trajectory leading up to Dovetail and how you ended up getting inspired to don the founder cap.
Yeah, it's funny. I come from a family of founders. My grandfather was a founder, and it was so it's sort of something that's always been like adjacent. And I went into grad school to be an occupational therapist because I wanted to. It was just a fascinating career to me that you were not you had to work within the goals of the person that you're working with versus here are your goals and you achieve them. It's client-centered. It is what is important to that person. What do they want to be able to do? So I got out of grad school. Got my dream job working in acute rehab, in a hospital down the street from my house, and I loved it. I worked with people that had all sorts of diagnoses, had all sorts of family structures, had all sorts of lives before and after the hospital, and it was really great. And also, I used to say but now I say and also, I saw that every person who comes into the hospital, every patient who gets wheeled into the hospital, comes with a family. They come with a person. They come with a caregiver. So you are really, as the OT or as the therapist, you're getting part of the equation. And that person, when they need help or whatever, they turn and they look to the person who's sitting next to them. These are the people who, when I used to come in the morning at 7:15 to start my day, they were folding the sheets because they had slept on the couch the night before and they had been there for 2 weeks. And they're trying to make things make sense. And then, like I said before, they're the ones who get handed these folders of information. They're the ones who meet with case management and they say, you need to call this person and do this and do this and do this. And just seeing the impact on these people who are doing something out of love, out of dedication, out of just caring and figuring out how to patch things together and make ends meet when it comes to their own life or the person that they're caring for. And I never had something to say, this can help it make it easier for you. I've seen I don't even know how many different solutions, right? I've seen the group chats, I've seen the emails, I've seen the text messages, I've seen the like there's a lot of different programs that do parts and pieces of this. I've seen the 2-inch binder with everything printed out, collated, whatever. Every digital and analog solution that people had, and none of it really, it wasn't a one size fits all. And I'm not aiming for a one size fits all, but a one infrastructure that can be molded and bended for different people and different needs. And so around the time that my first child was born, I decided that I was going to start a private practice. I did not go back full time after my daughter was born. I started a private practice doing home assessments with people. So I would go into people's houses before something happened, like if their family had questions about the setup of that. This is all pre-COVID. And I would work with people after someone had received a diagnosis and how they were going to modify the house or how they wanted, if they wanted a parent to move in or whatever. And with that, it was a continuation of the conversation that I had had in the hospital. Family caregivers trying to do all the things, lack of resources, lack of infrastructure, lack of, educational opportunities. There is a statistic that families receive less than 20 minutes of education in things like training and medication and all of those pieces at home. And they're doing medical work. You're talking about changing catheters, you're talking about dressing changes, you're doing all of this stuff. And so it was just another setting, same problem. Decided to play around with how can I think about this as an OT. We're a very analog profession compared to the rest of the therapies. So I started with pen and paper, and you draw like the idea tree. Like if this problem is here, who would I talk to about this, and pull it all together, and then started working with a designer to bring this to life. And it just kind of kept. It was like a curiosity driven snowball into entrepreneurship.
So, I mean, it makes great sense how you end up with this vision of distilling that analog decision framework into a piece of software to provide guidance. I'm curious how much of it is education versus collection. For the audience benefit, at least since when I was more involved with health tech. Generally speaking, clinicians were dismissive of patient-reported metrics. But I understand here the scope could be different, and family givers may simply just have questions. How would you break down the flow of information? How much of it is education, and how much of it is engagement after the fact?
Yeah, I think that there was a big shift that happened during COVID, which, in a lot of ways it was not great, right? It was a really hard time, but in other ways, I think it actually helped family caregivers because there wasn't this sort of like you come to the hospital and all of these things are happening and then you are given paperwork and then you go home and you carry these out. Families really had to be integrated because they were trying to not have people come into the hospitals. They didn't need to come in. They were trying to send people home so that they were, in a safer place, not, when COVID was running hot. And so with that, having this family report, having the data and all of that became less sort of, I am the practitioner, I know all the things, I'm gonna just keep doing what I'm doing, because there had to be so much more back and forth. And so I think this really came in at a great time because we're talking about like with these AI outputs where you're taking observation from somebody who may not have any healthcare experience and what they see, balance, appetite, all of those things. And then you're turning it into the language that a clinician sees because they have their own way of speaking and thinking about this and what that changes for them. So on our end, it is, yes, we're taking in this information on the platform. I don't hold the information. The information lives there. But we're taking in this information and then we're helping caregivers actually be able to turn this into usable things, usable outputs, so that they can get the information to the clinician, so that they can share it with their family. So when they have Aunt Sally who keeps emailing and asking for an update or text messaging, you can say, listen, here is the 1 month. And then people can follow this over time as they need to. Or you can say, I can send you a summary of all the things that are going on. And so that everyone is on the same page to really streamline that. So It's information taking in the beginning, and then down the road engagement in terms of like sending a prompt, sending a summary to your provider. Your provider looks at it. You're not having that conversation with the provider in that 20-minute appointment. They've already got all the information so that you actually can get to work in that 20-minute appointment and say, okay, we've tried this medication for blood pressure. We tried this medication for, whatever it is. And it doesn't seem to be working, or it seems to be having these side effects. I want to try this. What are your thoughts? So there is more time for back and forth dialogue between providers and caregivers, or providers and the patient that's coming in. So you're not trying to play catch up all the time, and it really integrates in a way that is efficient and effective, and the direction that the medical industry is always trying to get towards, right? How do we increase efficiency? How do we take this knowledge and apply it quickly to make changes to keep people out of the hospital and at home? Because that's where people want to be, and that's where providers want them to be.
Makes good sense. And so, as I think about scaling this business, chief among it is going to be adoption. Couple different ways you can skin that cat. If you're going straight to consumers, are you doing a direct to consumer play, or are you pursuing employer groups, or are you trying to get this as a benefit for payers? How to their members? What's the approach been so far, and what have been some of the lessons learned?
Yes, big lesson. So first step, and what has always been available, AOS or AOS, iOS, we launched last year in July. There are a lot of options out there, and people leave businesses. There is no more $50 or 50-year anniversary and a gold watch and a sheet cake, right? People leave because the benefits or their lifestyle of the company that they work for don't fit their lifestyle or what they need. So if you can offer something that's going to benefit everybody in the company, makes sense. The big lesson that we learned in the beginning is that I had originally set it up as individual memberships. So if I wanted to have it for my family, I would have to buy it. Then another person would buy it and all of that. And that's too much friction. Because what happens in a family where someone is trying to recruit more caregivers is that one person is making these decisions. One person is taking in the information. One person is probably burnt to a crisp and is like, I just need something else. And now you're talking about trying to sell to three or four other people for them to get subscriptions. So, big lesson learned is that one person has the ability to get as many subscriptions as they want. So they can say, here is what we're doing now. I have been carrying this for a long time. It is not a reasonable request. I need help with this, this, and this. This is the platform we're using. You can have access to this. The neighbor can help walk the dog. This person can help with this and this and this, and then it really allows that person to share the load in a much more simplified way.
Great.
Yes.
I think that makes great sense. And I think it's just more broadly just a great real world example of how, I don't know that everyone appreciates how nimble
Yeah,
founders need
yeah.
to be as they figure out go to market.
It's definitely, you get a lot of like, you realize that you're so close to something, your face is 2 inches away from it, and you're like, this is going to be amazing. You put it out there, and people are like, oh, well, my uncle won't use that, or my brother, or whatever. And you're like, okay, well, if that's not going to work, holy crap, what am I going to do now? Oh, let's think about the consumer, and let's think about the early adopter and why they're coming to this and what they need it to be able to do, and let's build towards them. Let's get on the phone with them. Let's ask people that we know who are going through this and say, what would that happen? So I interviewed over 100 people, 100 caregivers before I even started building. And then we continually, someone comes on and they say, oh, what is this? And tell me about it. I'm always like, I have 27 quick questions for you. And if you could, what do you think about this, or would this make this easier for you? So it's just this constant data collection, either through the app or with people that I meet in person.
Interesting. Did you always know? So, high five. My experience would tell you that's fundamental to success. Knowing your customer. Did you always know that? Are you hardwired to engage at that level, or was there a trigger where you're like, I need to talk to these 100 before I get started?
I think it was one of those like I had the idea. I started sort of you put it out there, right? It's like this little baby bird with no feathers on it, and you're like, "What do you think? Is this great?" And then people are like, "Well, what would work for me? And what would work for me?" And I just sort of kept asking. You know, I asked people that I was working with in the hospital. I asked people that I was working with in their homes, and you keep a running list of like these are things that these are pain points that people are having. These are things that they wish that they could find in the market. And then, you'd start running the ticks next to it, right? Like, oh, 27 people wish that they had the ability to group in family at different levels. All right. Well, and then from there we built the feature list to get to a certain point, to build the MVP, to put that out there. And so we have this product roadmap that isn't built because I think that something's a great idea. It's built because there was 10 people that said, this is what would have worked for me when my dad had ALS. This is what would have worked for me when my mom was going through cancer treatment. This is what would have been wonderful. And the nature of having those conversations comes from my career.
I mean, that's so. I mean, audience, take note. I mean, and that's a great methodology. It's very practical, but I think to your point, it's also very objective. You don't have to guess. Look, who's got the most tick marks? And this is where we're starting. No, that's great. And so, okay, so looking ahead, roadmap. What insights can you give us of not only where you'd like to see this to go, but how are you going to get there leveraging technology, i.e. artificial intelligence, or anything for that matter? I mean, I'll throw you a curveball and say, I can imagine if someone gets discharged with a stroke, there could be value in, seeing the DICOM files that come from the MRI that they take. And so you can go really, really wide with this, but would love to hear what you're thinking and what you think is a natural evolution to be able to optimize caregivers.
Yeah, I think for me the roadmap forward now, based on the where we started from, 3 years ago I went to a tech conference before I started building this, and everyone said you need a technical co-founder in order to have any sort of access or potential success or whatever. 2 years ago I went to the same tech conference and they said you need to have AI in everything. We are an AI first. AI is everywhere. It sort of exploded, right? Last year, I went to the same tech conference. They said, we need domain expertise. That's it. Because so many of these things, right? The technical piece, as a non-technical founder, the technical piece has become so much less of a hill or a hurdle. The AI piece, so much less of a hill or a hurdle. And I was very, very hesitant to integrate any sort of AI into the platform because I did not want, number one, like we talked about security with AI and healthcare information. Number two is I couldn't understand what would actually be helpful for people that AI could offer. And so 2 years ago, we didn't have something where we could integrate AI into it and it would make a meaningful solution. And I'm not going to put something in for the sake of putting it in. And so that's why now, where AI has evolved so much in the last 2 years, that we're talking about being able to train something that is not open AI, that is closed off and that runs in its own channel. And how can we take that and what can we train it to do and what can we teach it about healthcare and about this specific problem that is actually going to help people? And that's where the idea around the caregiver part, the communication part, we're not asking AI to give people a 27-page output on the diagnosis and all of the things that they need to do. That's not a value add. That's just another thing for the customer to have to wade through. How can we say, based on the data that you've put in, what can we do with this so that it adds value to you? It reduces friction, it increases education. And how can we put, I think one of the big things going forward is When people get a diagnosis or people hear a word, the first thing they do is they Google it, right? What does this mean? And nothing good ever comes out of Googling a diagnosis. Everything leads to death, right? It's like no matter what it is, everything leads down a dark, scary, terrible hole. When you go to your provider and you are meeting with them in an appointment and you have a diagnosis, they're not Google, right? They're not at the end of the road. They're going to talk to you about the next 5 steps because the next 5 steps are either manageable, meaningful. That's where the focus has to be, all of that stuff. So now we're not taking AI and we're going to run it down the line and it's going to say like, here's how to deal with the horrible things. We can say, based on the diagnosis, based on some information that you have put in that is in here just for you, these are the next 5 things to think about. When we have an output come out for your family, these are the questions that a provider is going to be asking. These are the questions that are pertinent to you as a family caregiver for what your next steps might be, so that that person has the guidance. That person has the ability to say, okay, well, we have to start thinking about modifications at home because mom's arthritis is getting worse and she's having a hard time navigating around her house. We're not going to wait and say, well, no one has told us that we need to do that yet. Mom falls and breaks her hip, and now she's in the hospital, and now we're modifying mom's house, the one that she's lived in for 50 years, and we have contractors who are in here drilling these awful looking grab bars into the bathroom tile that she has like picked out when she was 27 years old. We're bringing mom into the conversation. Hey, these are some of the things that we need to work on and we need to think about so that we are putting mom into the conversation. She's not a project to be managed. She's a person that is a component of this whole thing so that she can say, well, I don't love those grab bars, but I want to have that in. And so that's our roadmap forward is how can we keep more of the OT lens in this to bring people in and harness the technology like AI and teach it to do the things that we want it to do so that we are bubble wrapping in a helpful and productive way and giving families this step-by-step guidance as they navigate, these more long-term chronic conditions.
So it sounds like there's just a recognition that AI is a tool. It's a powerful
It's
tool,
here. Yeah.
but it's a tool, and you still got to keep sight of the outcome, which is recovery and or management. Makes a lot of sense. I think I may have sidetracked us though when I asked this about that's about the trajectory. So if we can go back, we still got to get the dovetail.
So trajectory for us is like we were saying, direct to consumer,
Oh no, I'm
employer.
sorry. I meant in the career progression leading up to Dovetail. You'd mentioned that you worked in the acute rehab place down the street, and then you'd shared with me the next place, but I that was still pre-COVID. Or you had your daughter, and now we were coming up on the inception of Dovetail, and what inspired you to start it.
So the birth of my daughter, and then I have 4 kids, so I had a couple more kids, and it was really integrating all of those pieces in. And a component of that, which I didn't realize at the time, was that my husband is self-employed. I at the time was self-employed in this private practice, is that we didn't have a way to communicate effectively about the things that were going on with our kids, right? Your kids start getting invited to a birthday parties, your kids start getting invited to these things, you've got information from the pediatrician, you've got information coming in here, there, and everywhere. So it was a little bit of it was a lot of it of caregiver, practitioner, parent. Holy cow, this is how we're going to get started. And so during COVID, the private practice wound down because it was going into people's houses, and I had very little kids. I had a baby and actually came home from the hospital the day before everything shut down for COVID. And so it was then your phone's ringing because people are wanting to take their loved ones out of assisted living and they want to move them home. And they're like, can you come over and help me with this? And you're like, I am dealing with my own situation here. I am so sorry. I'm unable to do that. And so that's what led to a period of hibernation, I'll call that, where I could say, okay, if I was going to build a solution, what would it look like? And that's what led to the start of Dovetail. That's where all the analog mind mapping, all of those pieces came. And then it has grown since then.
Necessity is definitely the mother of invention.
For
That is
sure.
excellent. Great stuff. So I see we're close on time before we wrap up. I personally love doing retrospectives after actions just to say, hey, what do we take away from what took place? Not to say that we would change anything, but at least highlighting things that have our attention, I find valuable. So where's the pattern recognition? Anything that you would call out, not necessarily doing different, but saying, oh, if I had a chance to give someone else advice about doing this or not doing that, what's on the list?
Yeah, I think advice that I would offer, it's so different. I think about this. I see people that are coming online now. They're building products, and like just in the last 2 years, how things have changed so dramatically in how people are able to build something and scale it. For me, looking back on how it started, I am glad that I built this before AI ran everything. Because the background, the infrastructure of the platform itself is overbuilt, purposefully. It's purposefully overbuilt for privacy, for security, for the ability to toggle things off and on to connect with other people. So I think it's more expensive to do it that way. And I think it's really easy, especially now when you see people come online and there's vibe coding and all of this stuff that comes out, and people are like, I can build something that looks like this and it can walk, talk, and do all of that. But then I think, like, how much do you have to undo in order to build the platform piece? So I think for me, the advice that I would offer to anyone is, if you look down the line, when you're starting to build this, if you look down the line and you think, eventually, where would I like this to go? Let that be the guidance for how you start to build the thing that you build now. Yes, build an MVP, vibe code the thing, show people what it can look like and all of that stuff, but also know where your code is, who owns the code, who has all of those pieces, because there's a whole other episode in that story. But yeah, that's what I would say to people.
I think really well said. I think there's a lot of hype, and maybe someone has set up an agent, but that's a far cry from an actual software platform that's going to get through a SOC 2 audit,
Yes.
or incorporate OWASP or NIST or any other one's security considerations, 100%. And I think that's kind of in line with the fact that the SaaS Armageddon was overblown, or that AI was immediately going to replace any engineers. To me, it's just a tool. It's a it, in the hands of someone who knows how to wield it. I mean, it could multiply your productivity materially.
For
But
sure.
totally makes sense. And I think having other people hear you say that is extremely valuable. I concur.
Yeah.
Ashley, enjoyed having you on the podcast. Learned a ton myself. Thank you. If there's anyone in our audience who wants to learn more, get a hold of you, how can they find you?
Yes. Thank you for having me. This was great. I always love it's funny because like when you're building these things, you sort of get like one after another, right? You're like on the train tracks going down the road. And so it's always wonderful to be able to stop and reflect back on these pieces. So if anyone has any questions, you can email me. I'm Ashley at dovetail.care. Dovetail.care is the website for everything. We are available on iOS. We are available on Android. Desktop is coming shortly. But yeah, no, I think those are great spots. I'm also on Instagram, and LinkedIn. I am probably most active on the business end on LinkedIn. So if you could find me there, I'm just Ashley Blackington.
Fantastic. Ashley, thank you. And again, for the benefit of our audience, Dr. Ashley Blackington, founder and CEO of Dovetail. And
Thank you.
that's another episode of the Innovator Investors Podcast. Thank you, Ashley. Take care.
Christian Marquez here. Thank you so much for listening to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. If you're a successful founder or an investor, would like to be on the podcast, please visit podcast.finstratmgmt.com/podcast-guest. If you've got something out of this interview, please share this episode on social media. If you know someone that would be a great guest, please tag them on social media to let them know about the show and include the hashtag innovators and investors. I'd love to see your posts and suggestions. We're regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you catch each new episode, please subscribe to the Innovators and Investors podcast. And your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a lot to me and my team. Would you like to know more? Go to our website, finstratmgmt.com, or follow us on LinkedIn or on X. Our handle is @finstratmgmt. This is Christian Marquez. Thank you for listening. Until next time.